Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games.
Chapter 30. Cost. I think the phrase unmitigated disaster is probably too light of a term, all things considered. The council chamber was cloaked in pitch, save for two harsh spotlights which fell on the subject of Jace Talus's ire, and over Jace himself. The fact of the matter was that no one in the council chamber was particularly happy with Camille Pharos. She had promised a great deal, but when the time had come to deliver, she had choked, or more accurately, her judgment had been off just enough to cost Piltover an impossible resource.
I make no excuses, Camille replied flatly.
Color me surprised, Jace replied flatly. Although I'll be the first to admit I can't even fathom what kind of excuse you would give.
I determined the weak points that were exploited by the Zorn Knights in order to gain access to the Eastern Sun Gate. The Western Sun Gate is already taking steps to modify their protocols and systems to ensure a repeat performance would be impossible,
Camille explained, as if she hadn't been utterly humiliated. Oh, well, that's a relief. Jace steepled his fingers as he drawled, I'm glad we managed that 2 weeks after it ceased to matter.
Would you rather lose 2 Sun Gates?
Camille asked tonelessly. I would rather not be stuck in a losing war, Lady Pharos, Jace said through his teeth. But thanks to your actions, we are now locked in a conflict that risks burning both cities to the ground.
As much as I hate to naysay, another light flicked on to illuminate Melmedarda as she leaned forward, I must admit that I am sorely disappointed in the clan's failure to hold the gate. We trusted you to safeguard Piltovan interests, and now we're worse off than ever. We've lost the ports to Bilgewater and Ionia, while Noxus is now on our doorstep.
Camille was infuriatingly unperturbed by the accusation being levied her way. Her impassive features showed no signs of trouble or shame, only a faintly annoyed disinterest.
We were beaten at the Sun Gates, I do not deny that, Camille said. However, I do question the purpose of this gathering, as it appears fashioned wholly to waste everyone's time.
I'm sorry.
A new light illuminated Bander Haskell, the late Elder Haskell's replacement, who, in Jace's opinion, was just as useless as his uncle.
Now we're interrupting your lunch hour. Our deepest apologies, he sneered. But unfortunately, considering that you just lost one of Piltover's greatest feats of engineering, while simultaneously handing Zorn a foothold in this war that you promised to win for us, there is the matter of accountability.
Ah, yes. Accountability, Camille echoed dully.
And something about the timbre of her voice set Jace's teeth on edge.
I do find it curious, she said in mocking tones. How keen this council is on accountability when it can be pointed beyond itself, don't you agree, Councillor Talus? Isn't that curious?
You're deflecting, Mel said before Jace could reply. This council was convened to judge you, Lady Pharos.
Naturally,
Camille replied, then asked.
But who judges you?
Another light flicked on to reveal Rima Shula, younger sister to the chair's prior holder.
We're an internally regulating body, Pharos. You know that, so don't—
Incorrect.
What?
Rima frowned as she leaned forward.
I said,
Camille replied as she turned to face Shula the Younger.
That your assertion of this body's self-regulatory nature is incorrect.
A chill went down Jace's spine as he recalled the conversation he'd had with Heimerdinger what felt like ages ago. The whispers and rumors that had proved to hold real water were suddenly rearing their head like a dragon. Heimerdinger had been right about a great many things, and it was only in time that Jace had truly appreciated the value of his lengthy vision. He hadn't been perfect, obviously. His golden vision had cast Zahn into a terrible shadow, and he was just as, if not more, responsible for its current state as anyone else, if only by negligence. In the end, his ideals of ethos and progress had slowly eroded to be replaced by greed and profit. And such was the nature of that erosion that Piltover's countermeasure had come into play after so long.
Logos, Jace said quietly.
Finally, Camille turned to regard him again. She didn't smile. For some reason, Jace thought he would have preferred that. He would have preferred that Camille showed some smug sense of victory, of humanity, instead of that cold metal expression.
I beg your pardon, Counselor Haskell said grumpily. What is Logos?
You spoke with Dear Cecil,
Camille said rather than asked, ignoring Haskell's question altogether.
That makes this easier.
Jace? Mel turned to look at him worriedly.
What is Logos?
Camille gestured for him to speak as if she were in control of the chamber, in a way he supposed she was. This had been a mistake, and Jace was only now grasping that. Logos, he began quietly, is the background process of Piltover. It's the intelligence collective which supplies every report that we read and documents every violation of the ethos committed by citizens and counselor alike. It is a system of pure information created in order to track whether or not the ethos is being willfully practiced or consciously ignored.
To clarify a point that I'm sure you're all thinking, Camille interjected, Logos has no authority nor capacity to enforce the ethos, only to document its practice.
With one caveat, Jace said thinly.
Just so, Mr. Tallis,
Camille replied, and there was a cold edge to her voice. Absurd, Shula said. This is absurd. The council rules Piltover, not you, Lady Pharos, and our authority is ironclad. Bulbach and Sallow both leaned forward, the lights above them flicking on as they voiced their agreement. It was too late, though. Jace only saw it in that moment, but he saw it all the same.
Enough, Mel said.
But there was a glassy quality to her voice. She knew just as Jace did that something was very wrong.
We are here to decide your punishment, not argue semantics.
Camille snapped a finger, and suddenly six black armored Khadra soldiers surrounded the council chamber. They moved with unnerving silence, and it seemed to Jace that they weren't even breathing. Not an inch of human flesh was visible, just full body black and brass armor.
Do you remember what I said before this started, Mr. Tallis?
Camille asked.
About the machine of progress.
You said it had to be dismantled,
Jace replied as he put a hand on Mel's. And to his surprise, she turned her hand up to meet it. It had been a long time since they'd been on the same page.
You said that if I didn't have the stomach to see the fluids that machine runs on, I should step down.
Counselor Sallow started to protest, but his words lodged in his throat as the barrel of an almost comically large handgun was suddenly pressed against the back of his head.
I permitted the council to remain in their chairs out of respect for Cecil, and to provide Piltover with a sense of continuity,
Camille said.
But make no mistake, this governing body is just as diseased as everything else.
She gestured dismissively to her men, and Councillors Bulbach, Sallow, Shula, and Haskell were yanked roughly from their seats.
As the last of the original council, I offer you both the dignity to leave your seats on your own 2 feet.
You would turn Piltover into another Noxus, Mel said tightly.
Naturally not,
Camille replied.
What else would you call this?
Mel snarled, nodding at the surrounding soldiers.
It's a military coup! You're just like them!
Camille took 2 steps forward until she was standing directly in front of Jace and Mel, those metal eyes of hers whirring to focus on the latter as she said,
This council is an obstruction, an edifice of short-sighted greed. I am dismantling it, just as I will dismantle everything else. I will end this rebellion, exterminate the rats of Zon, and unite the 2 cities, and once I have done that, I will renew the council and recede into the shadows.
She leaned forward until she was inches away from Mel.
I have no desire to rule, Miss Medarda. I desire only good order. If this council seeks to seat blame somewhere, lay it with your predecessors and yourself for being party to the hand that tarnished the golden dream of progress.
Mel's grip on Jace's hand tightened as she stood, chin high, and Jace stood with her. It was something he'd always admired about Melmedarda. Even in defeat, she was regal, more a queen than a counselor. "You will fail," Mel said softly, straightening out to her full and unnatural height. Camille said, "This council is adjourned." The aftermath of the Sungate's fall was devastating. All at once, the public's rabid cries for vengeance became hollow silence, as some fundamental part of them recognized that they had walked deliberately into a conflict from which there was no easy victory. Before the breaking of the water system, there had been an almost festival attitude toward the war. It had been something cheering and righteous, but also distant, despite it being practically next door to several districts. Then the water had stopped flowing, the sewage had started backing up, and the stink of waste had begun filling the streets. That would have been enough, but then disease had struck too, spread by rats and filth, and it clawed its way through the populace like a predator. Hospital spires and local clinics alike were flooded with the sick. And if it hadn't been for the chirurgeons of Demacia and their expertise, the death toll would have climbed drastically. That was when the war lost its celebratory appeal, and the people simply became angry. They crowed for blood, which the council promised them. The draconian measures restricting food to Zaun, they swore, would starve the Undercity within months. Soon, they said, the barons would come crawling back to Piltover with Loose Cannon Jinx and her traitorous lover in chains, begging for peace. Or else they would flee, and the new cadre would march through Zaun, bringing progress and order to the fissures and chasms. And then the Sungate fell, and anger turned to horror. As commandant of the Piltover Military Police, it was Caitlin's new duty to maintain order between the cadre and the public, which was easier said than done. The new cadre proved to be a bigger pain in the ass than the enforcers had ever been, and there was something about the nature of being military rather than simple keepers of council-made law that made the newly inducted soldiers of the brass cadres feel as though they were a law unto themselves. Every day, it seemed, she had more reports of young cadre soldiers stepping on toes, browbeating their own citizens, and altogether letting their egos bloat with the pride of their shiny new uniforms. That changed almost overnight. Over the course of a few weeks, complaints about the cadre had dwindled to almost nothing, and it was not secret as to why. They had all seen the bodies, after all. It had been a gruesome display that had made Caitlin sick to her stomach. The approach to the Eastern Gate was a broad thoroughfare that normally saw plenty of traffic. After Zaun took the gate, there was no more traffic, and 2 days later Zaun made another point. The bodies of Piltover's fallen had been hung from the gate overlooking the docks, and from lampposts in the streets in full view of the Piltoven citizenry, displayed like trophies in a grotesque warning against trespassing what was now Zaunite territory. All those bright and shiny cadre soldiers who had been so confident a month ago were suddenly faced with the grim reality that they were at war with a city full of killers who hated them. They saw their deaths reflected back in the empty eyes of their fallen brothers, and they saw that those deaths would not be glorious or honorable as the Demacians had taught them. Death would be death alone, and nothing more. But at least now there were fewer complaints. "Cupcake?" Caitlin looked up from her desk as Vi stepped into the office. It was the same office she had used since becoming sheriff. The only difference was that the plaque outside said Commandant, and below that was the subtitle, Cadre MP. "Come in," Caitlin said stonily as she signed off on another piece of meaningless paperwork. "How's the riot?" "Barely worth the name," Vi replied as she closed the door behind her. Caitlin snorted and nodded. "Compared to Zulnites, Piltoven riots are probably more like a polite protest." "More or less." Vi dropped down into the chair on the other side of her desk.
You were the news about the council.
Of course she had, everyone had.
Yes, and I've received far fewer complaints and concerns than I had expected. Although I suppose that's not terribly surprising given the council's recent incompetence.
It was Camille's plans, though, Vi argued. The council, I mean, look, I ain't a fan of them either, but Camille...
The council allowed Camille to do whatever she wanted, so long as she kept their business interests in the black, love.
Kaitlin said as she slapped the recent transfer order of a pair of MPs to another cadre in the finished pile, a bit harder than was strictly necessary before snatching up the next form from her to-do pile.
If that's all they're good for, they're better off gone.
Vi leaned in, bracing her shoulders against Caitlin's desk.
Kate, she's taking over, she said quietly. She's gonna turn Piltover into another Noxus or worse.
I don't care, Caitlin replied.
Bullshit.
Vi grabbed Caitlin's wrist before she could put stylus to paper.
I call bullshit on that. You've never not cared in your whole goddamn life.
Yanking her hand back, Caitlin slammed the stylus down, splattering ink across the form.
And what exactly am I supposed to care about? She hissed. Piltover and its golden dream of progress are dead. And Zon won't accept our help if we offered it. The only thing I can do is protest my people, so tell me, Violet, why should I care what Camille does anymore?
Because this,
Vi swept her hand around the cluttered office, is exactly what she wants. She grabbed the stylus and held it up between them.
Because she learned from Marcus fucking Gleamspire's mistake. She could have kicked you out,
but she didn't.
Because the last time that happened, it took you 2 whole days to go full renegade. And this is exactly why she fucking promoted you, Cupcake, so you'd tie yourself up in knots trying to do your job and stay out of her way.
You think I don't know that?
Caitlin snatched the stylus back.
But thanks to this promotion, my only options are to resign my commission and let Camille string me up for the public as a sympathizer and a coward, neglect my duties, which could result in the second verse being the same as the first, or do this!
She stabbed the stylus into the form that was now thoroughly inked and ruined.
And try to protect as many of our people as I can from the blowback of the war.
There was no other path that Caitlin could see. For the first time, she regretted ceding her family's ancestral seat on the council. Perhaps if she had taken that up instead of taking on the role of sheriff, she could have done more. Her father had tried his best, bless his heart. But something in him had faded when her mother had died in the blast. He had eventually left, and with no other children left, House Kiriman's seat had fallen to Caitlin, who had neither the desire, time, nor interest in filling it. And so the seat had been removed, and the council had gone down to 7 as it had been before Jace had joined. Now, seeing what had become of Piltover, Caitlin wondered if everything she'd done up to that point had been a mistake. Maybe with her voice added to Jace's, they could have effected some greater change, or at least headed this disaster off at the pass. Those thoughts kept her up at night more often than not. There was nothing for it, though. Nothing could be done to change the past, which left Caitlin with this awful present and all of its associated miseries.
"Maybe you can't," Vi said quietly.
"But what if I can?" Caitlin sighed. "What are you talking about?" Vi slapped down something on the desk between them and pushed it toward Caitlin, who picked it up quizzically. It was a missive contained in a non-standard delivery apparatus with the strangest lock she'd ever seen.
"What is this?"
Caitlin asked, looking back up at her wife.
"Dunno," Vi replied. "Some guy at the riot broke the line to take a swing at me, and I clocked him good, but as I did, he slapped this into my hand."
She huffed out a laugh. Whatever it is, he thought it was worth taking one of my right hooks to his jaw to deliver it. Sitting back in her chair, Caitlin turned the small tube over and over in her hands, letting her eyes trace the intricate lines, and slowly, a smile twitched over her lips.
"It's a puzzle box,"
Caitlin said after a moment as she began twisting small sections of it that had, on the surface, appeared to be decorative.
"When I was a little girl, I had several of these. All handmade as gifts by a talented young engineer that our family patronized."
"It's from someone you know?"
Vi asked.
"Yes, and you know them too."
Caitlin smiled as the last piece clicked into place. and the top of the apparatus popped open. His name was Jace Tullis, and I would recognize his tinkertry anywhere. She upended the tube, and a tight roll of paper fell into Caitlin's palm as Vi moved around the desk to lean over her wife's shoulder.
"Huh," Vi muttered. "Who knew the big guy could make something that small?"
"He was wonderfully talented, but I wish he'd just stayed in his workshop," Caitlin said quietly as she unrolled the paper, then let out a thoughtful hum. "It seems our dear Mr. Tullis isn't quite throwing in the towel." It read,
"Grayson's tomb. Midnight."
It was an offer. It was treason and sedition, but it was also an offer. Clearly Jace wasn't willing to hand over Piltover without a fight. And seeing that gave a much-needed breath of air to the ember of Caitlin's defiance. Maybe Camille had made a mistake after all. She had promoted Caitlin and tied her up with duties because, to Camille, it was Caitlin who was the real threat. Vi was Zonite, and for all Camille's talk of not underestimating her enemies, she did so with Zon nearly constantly. Vi was being treated like a dog who followed at Caitlin's heel, and so long as Caitlin was controlled, so too would Vi be, but that didn't have to be the case.
"Well, we going?"
Vi asked. "No," Caitlin replied as she handed the message over. "You are. Camille will be watching me, but you're beneath her notice for now, and you need to stay that way. Do you understand?" Vi eyed the roll of paper cautiously, then nodded and took it.
"Yeah, I get it," she said softly.
"If we are to do this, then he will have to be my eyes and my ears and my red right hand, Violet," Caitlin said quietly. "Are you willing to do that?" Unrolling the paper, Vi scanned the two words again and again. This wasn't what she had signed up for. Caitlin had promised her change, and she had failed. She had been a bad wife and a worse sheriff, but Vi had always stayed with her, always encouraged her, always believed in her.
"I know you want to help, son," Caitlin said quietly, "but I can't do anything for them now. All I can do is try and help the people of this city, and I know that's terribly unfair and awful of me to ask, but..."
Vi shook her head.
"Nah, people of Zon will be fine," she said with a quiet laugh as she rolled up the paper. "They've got one daughter of the Lanes looking out for them. They don't need another." Laughing bitterly, Vi looked up at Caitlin. "You know what they call her now?"
"Kemlord." Caitlin repeated the name with a singular dread.
"Yep, Kemlord Jinx," Vi laughed again. "My baby sister is the ruler of all Zon, and she'll look after it, so yeah, you've got me, Cupcake. Let's do this."
Standing sharply, Caitlin wove her fingers into Vi's short, ragged hair and pulled her close, kissing her desperately. Without her wife, Caitlin was sure she'd have fallen into despair. She'd spent the last few weeks teetering over the edge all the same. How could she, though? Vi had survived so much worse. She had survived the Undercity, then Stillwater, then the upheaval that followed Jinx's attack on the Council and the birth of Zon itself. Pulling back, Caitlin said,
"All right, go, my love. And when you get home, tell me everything."
Vi winked. "You got it, Cupcake."
"Golden ideals tarnished. Arden Oliphant. The Clockwork Herald. Aurea 18. 999 AN. In the history of Piltover, there has been only one darker day upon record, and that is the day that the Council was massacred by the terrorist Jinx. It is perhaps fitting, then, that its competitor would also be perpetrated by the same figure of infamy. With the fall of the Eastern Sungate and the wholesale slaughter of its protective force, this edifice of Piltover ingenuity has been seized by Zonite hands, and with it, our worst fears have been realized. Now freed from their bonds within the fissures, reports have flooded our offices of the sacking and pillaging of the Seagate docks. Trade and leisure vehicles alike have been looted, and worse, the wolves of Noxus have come knocking at our very door. Some have suggested that this was an inevitable course, that by allying ourselves with Noxus's longtime rival Demacia, we have chosen a side in their ancient conflict. Perhaps this is merit to that notion, but even if that were the case, not even Noxus could stove in the walls of Piltover without aid from within. aid that Zorn is more than happy to give. Within the weeks following the Sungate's fall, difficult questions have been posed both to and about our ruling council, questions like how and why. The council's efficacy in the matter of Zorn has become a matter of debate, with recent readers certainly recalling the days of uncertainty following the destruction of Dam Sextus, the demolition of Spire 14, as well as the attacks launched by Jinx beyond our borders. Long-time readers will also recall the more sporadic but no less destructive incidents involving the then-called Loose Cannon. Our own sheriff prioritized the capture of the terrorist, but lacked critical support from certain quarters of the council chamber. Is it any wonder there's been an outrage? Is it any wonder there have been questions? Well, dear readers, this morning we were given a shocking reply to our grief, our questions, and our rage. The Council of Piltover is no more. The announcement came through official channels this morning. The council was dissolved under a clause of no confidence invoked by the venerable Clan Ferrus. Drastic as it might seem that a single clan or house might hold such executive authority, it does, in fact, appear that this clause is writ into the founding legislature of Piltover, with its signatory being no less than Cecil B. Heimerdinger himself. The wording is exceedingly lengthy, but otherwise straightforward. A summation of the legislation follows, stating that the council shall be dissolved under the so-called Logos Clause, to be executed directly by Camille Pharos in the event of a catastrophic failure, abandonment, or corruption, willful or otherwise, of the ethos, and who shall take provisional control of Piltover until such time as the ethos and its associated council can be safely reinstated. Elder members of our city must surely remember the golden age of prosperity and progress under the watchful eye of our founder. This legislation not only bears his seal of authority and approval, but names Camille Pharos as a direct successor to his intent. While the clan has long been a member of our upper society, this marks the first time that a Pharos has taken a direct hand in matters. To see the council removed from power is a humbling thing. Speaking for myself, I never imagined a scenario wherein the council would be unseated. With that said, I cannot find it in myself to argue the point. The leadership of the council has been tested and found wanting, and if there is any heart to take from this chaotic shift in the norm, it is this. Our beloved founder foresaw this potentiality and planned for it. I implore all of the good people of Piltover to take confidence from that fact as I do. We tread uncertain ground, but it is not wholly unmapped. So take heart, Piltovans, that there is still a plan and an intent for the healing of our great city, even in this most dire circumstance. Where there is a plan, there is hope, and where there is hope, there will always be progress. We must hold that plan and that hope and keep faith that Piltover will rise greater and brighter than ever from this trial. Piltover rises.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.